national parliamentarians as possible, where we are having also dialogues with the citizens, meeting with the stakeholders, with the industry, to listen to them, what are their primary concerns, but also to explaining them how we would like to achieve this transition. Of course, each country is asking what the energy union means for me, and I think in Portugal, I think it's very clear that some of the concerns are the same as everywhere in Europe, to reduce energy poverty, to reduce energy prices for the households, for the industry. At the same time, in Portugal, it also has a very special meaning for doing everything possible and to get all the assistance you might need from the European Commission to get Portugal better interconnected with the rest of Europe. I think lots has been done. We can discuss all the projects for improving the interconnection between Portugal and Spain, but especially between Spain and France, and then also some infrastructural additions which have to be done in France, so the whole Europe can benefit from the Portuguese potential, but also that Portugal could benefit much better than until today from the huge European market. And this is exactly why we decided that we want to build the energy union around these five dimensions. At first, to make sure that we have energy, we have it when we need it, that we have security of supply, and we will not face the situation as the Central and Eastern Europe was facing in 2009, where there was complete cutoff of gas supplies, leading to very dramatic situations. So the first dimension is very much focused on energy security, on the diversification of supply, and here I think Portugal, thanks to your LNG capacities, are doing quite well, and your gas and oil supplies are quite well diversified, so therefore here again the rest of Europe could benefit from your capacities if we get Portugal better interconnected with the rest of the European market. Second dimension is about completing the internal energy market. You know how important it is from the point of view of interconnections, but this is only one part of the problem. We still have a lot of administrative barriers. We have energy regulators who do not talk to each other as they should. We still have different rules, different network codes, which we have to really harmonize in a way that the energies could really flowing freely among the and around the member states, to make sure that we have more competition on the market and more pressure for reducing the price in our member states, because it's one of the key elements how to keep our industry competitive and how to improve the living standards of our citizens. The Portugal already made a quite big progress in what will be dealt within the third dimension of the energy union, and this is energy efficiency. Here it's a huge potential for the whole Europe. You know that we pay every year around 400 billion euros for energy imports, and 40% of the all energy consumed in Europe we use for heating and cooling of our buildings, which is enormous amount of money. And we know that by increasing the energy efficiency just by 1%, we can import, for example, by 2.6% less of gas. So we can imagine what would be the savings if we can increase energy efficiency by 5 or 10%, if we can upgrade our buildings, if we can use the technologies we have in Europe in a way that it would really lead to the energy savings and to the reduction of the bills our consumers, our citizens are paying for the energy bills. And then, of course, we want to do it in our own European way, meaning being environmentally friendly, respecting our climate action goals, and putting into the practice that agreement which was achieved by the head of states and government at the European Council in October last year, where they agreed that we will reduce the greenhouse gas emissions by 40% increase production from renewables to 27% and achieve the same percentage in the term of improved energy efficiency. So all that legislative proposals and energy transition we are now launching should be done within the parameters of the climate change, using environmentally friendly clean tech technologies and really doing it in our European way. Yesterday I was in Lyon, where President François Hollande was organizing the World Climate Summit for non-state actors, meaning mayors, municipality representatives, NGOs. There was enormous interest and support for this approach, because people on the municipal level are very often in direct contact with their citizens, and they know what the citizens want. There was one figure which I retained in particular, and this was that 80% of global citizens, because it was larger than Europe, there have been people from all over the world, are concerned about the environmental future. 80% of the citizens are worried what might happen if we will not stop the climate change. They see not only the tornadoes in Florida, but they see the floods in Central Europe, drought in Africa, monsoons in Asia, and all these natural disasters which are having these very costly secondary effects, like high pressure on migratory flows, making the whole areas of our continent simply unlivable. And therefore, there is strong support for this approach. And when I explain that what, for example, this 40% greenhouse gas reduction means for the world, it means that in 2030, if we follow our objectives, we would have less emission, which would correspond to the volume of the emissions emitted by France, Germany, and United Kingdom together. So the three major European economies emitting zero greenhouse gas emissions. This is how ambitious the European goal is, and we know that it's achievable, and I know that you in Portugal are doing very well, that you are going to hit your 2020 targets, and you are on the best way to achieve also 2030 targets. And when we discussed with your minister the Green Plan, it's very clear that Portugal is very well positioned to meet all the requirements and the expectations. I know that for you the very important issue is interconnections, and I think that now it's very clear that it becomes one of the top European priorities. It's definitely one of the priorities of the Energy Union. Thanks to strong voice of Portugal, especially before the last European Council, everybody in the EU realized that after many years of being the EU member, you've still been kind of energy island because of the lack of interconnections with France, lack of interconnections with Portugal, with Spain, and now it's quite clear that the plans which are being drawn are of course aimed at increasing your interconnectivity with Spain to at least 10%, which can be done with one concrete infrastructural projects. But what is more important for you for the access to the rest of the Europe is to cooperate and to have better interconnectivity for gas and electricity with France. And the good thing is that this cooperation is developing positively. We have now several memorandum of understanding signed, but we have also good political will from all three countries to progress in that direction. And I believe that also the targets which we set for the Energy Union to have at least 10% interconnection by 2020 and 15% by 2030 would clearly contribute to the Portuguese position on the market, using better your potential in renewables, using better the capacity of your LNG terminals, but also profiting from the bigger market because you will be much better interconnected with the Europe than before. The last dimension of the Energy Union is focused on research and innovation. We have almost 6 billion euros allocated for specifically specifically prepared energy research and innovation programs, and I was quite impressed by the projects which are already being done in Portugal, be it the concept of the wave farm, be it the concept of the solar farm, or other projects which clearly show that Portugal, thanks to the push for renewables, acquired a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience with this high-tech research, and I'm sure that that would be a big contribution to our transition, to our energy change, and also to the export potential of Europe. Because when I was in the biggest industrial trade fair, which is every year organized in Hanover, I was in the group of Chancellor Merkel and the key guest from the partner country, India, Prime Minister Modi. And of course, from one side, the Indian Prime Minister was very much interested in showing us what the India can offer, how the India is transforming itself. But at the same time, it was very clear that he was looking for the cleanest way how to secure the electricity to the 300 million Indian citizens who do not have regular access to electricity. And they know very well that if they would use the conventional, traditional means of power generation, that would be too environmentally dangerous, that they could have another experience like China, where because of the air pollution, it's very difficult to live in these cities, that it's very difficult to maintain the pace of the development, and they realize that they have to go for these clean technologies, they have to go for the energy transition as well. And I think here Europe, as a prime mover, has a lot of offer, and I'm sure that the projects which are also being developed in Portugal would have this huge potential. To conclude, let me just tell you where we are, what's going to happen in the coming weeks and months. On the 15th of July, we are going to present the first legislative proposals linked to the Energy Union. We are coming with a proposal how to reform emission trading system for the post-2020 period and adjust it to these new climate goals, which our heads of state and government approved in October of the last year. We are going to present the communication on how to change and redesign our electricity market, which I believe would be the landmark legislation which we would like to put on the table next year and use this year for the very intense consultation process with all the stakeholders. We are going to present communication which is called New Deal for Consumers, oriented and means how we can empower our citizens to have more choice if it comes to energy supplies, how to improve something which is called demand side management, meaning that the consumers could become those who would produce the energy, who would be masters of the energy consumption, and to allow them, if they want, to become prosumers. And the last piece of the legislation we are putting on the table has to do also a lot with energy efficiency. It's energy energy labeling revision of the directive, which would allow again the consumers to have more informed choice when they will be buying electric appliances. In autumn, we are going to present new plan for strategic energy research, how to use the 6 billion I was referring to for much more focused research and innovations programs in our member states. In later on, we are going to present European LNG strategy, because we clearly see a lot of potential for the LNG in European energy mix. And we are going to combine it with the revision of security of gas supply directive, where we would like to factor in the experience and the information we gathered during the recent gas stress test, which clearly show what we have to do to make sure that we would not face the energy gas crisis in the next years, and that we would make sure that diversification is the name of the game, and that we would have the energy in Europe when we would definitely need it. So if you allow me to conclude, I once again would like to thank you very much for your kind invitation. to come here also with this new capacity. I would like to ask you, as you always been, to continue to be very active national parliament, because I think you are traditionally number one if it comes to sending your opinions, your views to the European Commission. And once now we are going to present such important proposals, which could really transform and reshape the energy landscape in Europe, we would definitely welcome the opinion of your parliament. So when we start to legislate, we know what you think about it, what is your opinion, so we can factor in your comments, your ideas, and also your experience. So Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for your kind invitation and for giving me the floor to inform the members of your parliament about the top priorities of the energy union. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President Sefcovic. I would like also to inform you that the Portuguese Parliament has scrutinized both communications of the Commission 2015-80 and 2015-82 on the framework strategy of the Energy Union and on the objective of 10% of interconnections. We have among us the reporters in both committees, on the Economy Committee and in the European Affairs Committee. As we have now translation already, I will now switch to Portuguese. You can follow with simultaneous translation. Senhores deputados, vamos passar ao debate. Por uma questão de eficiência, eu sugeria que as respostas fossem conjuntas, isto é, que a resposta fosse no final e conjunta a todas as questões, com um tempo máximo para cada grupo parlamentar de entre 5 e 6 minutos, por volta de 5 minutos. Começamos pelo Partido Socialista. Senhor Deputado Vitalino Canas, tem a palavra.
Muito obrigado, Senhora Presidente. Gostaria de começar por, em nome do Partido Socialista, dar as boas-vindas ao Comissário Sefcovic. Mais uma vez, como membro desta Comissão, já desde há alguns anos, habituei-me já a dialogar com o Comissário Sefcovic de uma forma franca e creio que a experiência que o Parlamento Português tem na relação com o Comissário Sefcovic é uma experiência muito positiva, talvez mesmo a mais positiva, tendo em conta as frequentes vezes que veio aqui, sempre com grande disponibilidade. Aliás, é fácil estabelecer o contraste entre os anos em que foi comissário encarregue das relações com os Parlamentos Nacionais, em que tínhamos normalmente muita facilidade em tê-lo aqui, e este ano em que tivemos muita dificuldade em ter aqui um comissário para dialogar connosco sobre o programa de trabalho da Comissão Europeia. Aproveitava a sua presença aqui e a sua experiência para lhe pedir que sensibilizasse os seus colegas para, em anos futuros, podermos ter um diálogo mais fácil com a Comissão a propósito do programa de trabalho. Vou resistir aqui à tentação de falar aqui do tema de que todos, penso eu, gostaríamos de falar hoje, que é o tema da Grécia, que nos toca muito particularmente, como é óbvio, e em relação ao qual olhamos com grande atenção. É um tema da máxima importância, mas compreendemos que não é esse o tema que o traz aqui hoje. Em relação ao tema que o traz aqui hoje, já referiu os aspectos mais importantes, designadamente já salientou a importância da União da Energia para Portugal, já salientou também a forma como Portugal há alguns anos tem vindo a procurar cumprir as metas, antecipando, aliás, os prazos, designadamente ao nível da eficiência energética e ao nível das energias renováveis. Creio que Portugal aí está na linha da frente, não apenas na Europa, mas ao nível mundial. É um dos países mais inovadores e que mais depressa tem avançado nesse campo, e da parte do Partido Socialista haverá todo o interesse em que o ritmo se venha a intensificar. Também referiu as questões das interligações, importantíssimo para Portugal, e referiu as questões relacionadas com os preços da energia. Referiu-se à Europa. A Europa, de facto, tem energia cara quando é comparada com outros competidores, designadamente a China, que referiu no final, designadamente com os Estados Unidos. A Europa tem preços de energia muito caros, o que traduz dificuldades para a nossa indústria e a nossa competitividade. Mas dentro da Europa, Portugal tem preços também ainda mais caros do que a média europeia. E, portanto, Portugal necessita aí de ter uma evolução muito sensível. E a primeira pergunta que lhe deixo aqui é: quais são as expectativas com a União Energética de os preços de energia se nivelarem na Europa? E de os países que hoje, como Portugal, têm preços muito elevados, poderem vir a ter a expectativa de os seus preços nivelarem com a Europa e para podermos ser competitivos não em relação ao exterior à Europa, mas em relação à própria Europa. Depois, segunda questão que lhe queria aqui deixar, tem a ver com o ritmo das interligações. Nós sabemos que está previsto até 2020, mas não gostaríamos que tudo acontecesse em 2019 e 2020. Portanto, gostaria de lhe perguntar sobre o ritmo das interligações e já agora deixar aqui uma nota de pormenor que normalmente não é identificada, é que na União Energética e nas interligações não estamos interessados apenas pelas questões da diminuição do preço, do acesso mais fácil aos mercados. Estamos também interessados porque temos aqui um setor de construção que se deprimiu com a crise e que está muito interessado nesta pasta da energia e das interligações. O setor da construção, que aliás tem altíssima especialização e que estaria interessado também em estar nos projetos de ligação com a Europa. Depois, outra questão tem que ver com a atual situação da relação com os Estados Unidos da América, sobretudo no contexto do TTIP. O pacote energético é um pacote que está, obviamente, a ser negociado no contexto do TTIP. Sabemos que os Estados Unidos têm restrições à exportação de energia, digamos assim, não sei se o termo técnico pode ser assim dito, mas têm restrições tradicionais. Essas restrições, é óbvio que têm de ser levantadas no contexto do TTIP, mas gostaria que o Sr. Comissário nos desse alguma indicação sobre como está isso a ser negociado com os Estados Unidos. Depois, a terceira questão tem que ver com as interligações entre a Europa e outros países fornecedores, designadamente os países do leste, do Cazaquistão, o Azerbaijão, etc. Sabemos que existem vários projetos, são importantíssimos para a security, para também a diversificação dos fornecedores. Gostaria também que nos desse aqui indicação sobre qual é que é, nesta altura, o ponto da situação dos vários projetos que existem, qual é que é a expectativa, tendo em conta os óbvios problemas que existem na zona que está entre a Europa e os fornecedores e qual é que é a perspectiva que a União Europeia tem neste momento em relação a este assunto. Muito obrigado.
Como disse inicialmente, vamos juntar as questões com resposta conjunta e passamos ao PSD. Sr. Deputado Nuno Matias, tem a palavra.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Um cumprimento também ao Vice-Presidente Sefcovic e saudá-lo não só pela disponibilidade de estar aqui connosco a debater um tema tão central do desenvolvimento da economia e da nossa civilização da União Europeia, tendo a certeza de que a energia tem sido, em parte, algum travão de competitividade das nossas empresas. Tem sido também um travão por comparação, e já aqui foi referido, nos preços que estão à disposição, seja das famílias, seja das nossas economias, para, do ponto de vista da competitividade, conseguirem criar valor e acrescentar razões de crescimento. E quando a Comissão Europeia lança um objetivo tão estratégico, tão central e tão estruturante como a União da Energia, tomamos muito boas as palavras do Presidente da Comissão, Jean-Claude Juncker, quando diz que a energia tem estado muito afastada das liberdades fundamentais, porque realmente nem sempre tem sido um projeto que está ao alcance de todos, de igual maneira, com a mesma possibilidade de desenvolvimento, e a prova disso está no custo associado, como referiu e bem, que é o facto de importarmos 53% da energia que consumimos, em alguns casos sem eficiência, e que tem um custo, como também referiu, de mais de 400 mil milhões de euros. Ora, está aqui um fator de travão que nós percebemos, e por isso saudamos a Comissão Europeia quando define a União da Energia como um objetivo de alavancar crescimento e desenvolvimento. E aí levava-me à primeira pergunta, que é: de que forma é que entende que o Plano Juncker, naquilo que é a ambição de potenciar um conjunto de investimentos estratégicos que terão um volume expectável de 315 mil milhões de euros, se bem que parte de uma base comunitária de apenas 21 mil milhões e, portanto, terá que alavancar um conjunto de intervenções de investidores privados para este desenvolvimento estratégico, de que forma é que esse plano pode, deve e vai ser possível concretizar de forma a alavancar esta união de energia? Porque nós percebemos que há um conjunto de investimentos estratégicos que visam dotar estas interligações e criar uma verdadeira união que ligue os Estados, que diversifique as fontes de fornecimento, que permita, como aqui foi questionado, ter preços mais competitivos da energia, que crie uma base de competitividade maior à nossa economia, à nossa estrutura produtiva. E por isso o Plano Juncker pode, e de que forma é que pode, concretizar este plano de desenvolvimento. Uma segunda questão tem a ver com as interconexões, como disse e bem, onde Portugal desde há muito definiu como um objetivo estratégico, porque não só temos as potencialidades das energias renováveis, temos, como disse também, uma ligação privilegiada com o norte da África do ponto de vista do fornecimento de gás natural. Podemos ser aqui um ponto de interconexão também com o resto do mundo, do ponto de vista da diversificação e do acrescento de oportunidades, seja de produção, seja de distribuição. E, por isso, queria que nos pudesse também elucidar sobre, do ponto de vista da Comissão Europeia, de que forma é que a recente cimeira de Madrid, que juntou os governos de Portugal, Espanha e França, com a presença do Presidente da Comissão, foi ou não um passo determinante para a concretização daquilo que, em outubro passado, foi também uma decisão do Conselho Europeu, no sentido de potenciar investimentos objetivos, calendarizados, que assegurem que as interconexões não passem apenas por uma ambição numérica e que sejam concretizadas rapidamente, que os 10% sejam apenas um passo, que não se pare aí, porque as interconexões, como aqui já foi dito, permitem acrescentar oportunidades, permitem baixar preços, permitem garantir segurança no abastecimento e, com isso, acrescentar razões de crescimento e desenvolvimento. E pensamos nós que o governo português, e bem, teve um papel forte, como disse há pouco, uma voz forte e liderante. De que forma é que a Comissão Europeia vai acompanhar este esforço para que se garanta que estas oportunidades que Portugal, a Península Ibérica têm, possa ser também um fator de alavancagem para toda a Europa, num princípio de solidariedade e de união, que ao fim e ao cabo está subjacente desde o início nesta União da Energia. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Passamos ao CDS. Sr. Deputado Rui Barreto, tem a palavra.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Cumprimento em nome do CDS, Partido Popular, o Sr. Comissário Maros Sefcovic, e agradeço a sua vinda mais uma vez ao Parlamento Nacional e aos temas tão importantes e estratégicos para o futuro da Europa como aqueles que hoje referiu. Muitas das questões foram aqui vincadas pelos meus colegas. O Sr. Comissário sabe que Portugal fez um enorme investimento em energia e é hoje um país de referência até em tecnologia de energias renováveis, e nós temos hoje um mix de produção em que a componente de energias limpas é assim muito significativa. Nós temos um problema, é que fizemos um investimento muito significativo nisso, e acho que isso terá impactos positivos no médio e longo prazo, mas a verdade é que no curto prazo isso não se está efetivamente a verificar, porque muitos desses custos estão a ser suportados pelo Sistema Elétrico Nacional devido exatamente a bloqueios na exportação de energia. E por isso, essas metas em que muitas vezes se fala de Portugal como uma referência a nível europeu, têm que dar passos, temos que dar passos largos no sentido de que esses ganhos possam também ser redistribuídos pelos consumidores portugueses e que Portugal possa vender e exportar essa energia para o espaço europeu, ganhando com isso eficiência na sua produção e baixando os custos com a energia. E por isso é que não é, é que o Sr. Primeiro-Ministro de Portugal bateu-se para que nas interconexões fosse, as metas europeias fossem mais ambiciosas, 10% em 2020, 15% em 2030, mas nós gostaríamos que ainda fossem mais ambiciosas do que aquelas que conseguimos, que são obviamente meritórias, mas por isso é que nós pedimos e recomendamos ao Sr. Comissário que invista também a sua energia nesta matéria que é muito importante e que nos pode ajudar sobremaneira. Uma questão que também gostaria de deixar, foi assumido um compromisso no Conselho Europeu de Outubro, no Conselho Europeu de Outubro de 2014, que apontava para a execução de projetos de interesse comum no setor do gás natural, como o Corredor Norte-Sul, o Corredor Meridional de Gás e a promoção de uma nova plataforma de gás natural no sul da Europa. Mas esse compromisso foi, de certa forma, omisso em termos de datas. Gostaria de perguntar ao Sr. Comissário que informação é que nos pode dar em relação a esta matéria, que é também muito relevante. E agradeço-lhe mais uma vez, em nome do CDS, a sua presença neste Parlamento. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado. Pergunto se há mais alguma intervenção, não sendo o caso. Sr. Deputado Bravnico, por favor, do Partido Socialista.
Muito bom dia a todos. Antes de mais, Sr. Vice-Presidente, Sr. Comissário, muito bom dia também. A minha questão é muito curta e simples e prende-se com uma das áreas em que é, digamos, da sua responsabilidade, presumo eu, e que tem a ver com a certificação, a verificação da segurança das centrais de produção de energia elétrica, centrais nucleares, em funcionamento na União Europeia. Nós temos em Portugal, como sabe, uma linha de centrais nucleares em funcionamento aqui no nosso país vizinho, em Espanha, uma das quais foi sujeita recentemente a testes de stress, que não passou, portanto, testes de segurança, que não passou, e nós naturalmente estamos um pouco preocupados com isso. Gostaria de saber qual é a linha de verificação e certificação de segurança das centrais nucleares da União Europeia e se tem conhecimento da situação da central nuclear de Almaraz, aqui no nosso país vizinho de Espanha. Muito obrigado.
Sr. Deputado António Cardoso, do Partido Socialista, ainda.
Obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Começo também por saudar o Sr. Comissário. A questão que pretendo colocar prende-se com a produção de energia elétrica em França e na Alemanha. Um lado é o nuclear que prevalece e no outro é o carvão. Como controlar a medida de hipocarbónica é a questão que se coloca, bem como a estabilização dos preços de produção, porque presentemente a França tem preços mais acessíveis, porque a produção tem um meio mais económico, embora com maior risco. Portanto, era a questão que eu gostava de colocar. Muito obrigado.
Não há mais intervenções. Agradeço. O Sr. Comissário tem a palavra para responder.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your questions, and I see that I'm among energy experts because really your question has been all very much to the point, and the issues you highlighted, you raised, will be, I would say, the issues which would. The way how we resolve them would really determine if we would have a success with the energy union or not. Mr. Kanas was referring, started to refer to Greece, and it's true he rightly pointed out that now we are in a situation where we on the side of the European Commission really have a clean conscience that we tried everything, we did everything, we've been cooperative until the last minute, but now there are very important internal processes taking place in Greece, and we just simply have to wait how all the issue of referendum and I would say the position of the Greece will be formulated after this weekend, because it's very difficult to have a discussion when you do not know what is or what will be the position of the country after the weekend. So I think that here we will need to wait. We of course very much want Greece in Eurozone. We very much want the Greece to prosper. We very much want to help the Greece, but it's always very important to find the solution which is acceptable for all countries which are sharing the common currency, and that was the effort which we really did to our maximum, and now we simply would have to wait how the situation would evolve in coming days in Greece. But coming to the subject of today's debate, Mr. Kanyas was referring to the energy prices, and he's very much right that this is the, I would say, top item together with the quality of labor force, which is very much put in any debate on the table by our industry. When you ask them what are our major problems with competitiveness, facing all the challenges of this accelerated globalization, so they mention these two things. At first, of course, it's energy. How much we pay for our energy bills? How much we pay in Europe? How much we pay on other global markets? And they always show you, you know, two balance sheets. So this is our plant in the States. This is our plant in Europe. Look, I mean, more or less the other costs are similar. The quality of production is very similar. But if it comes to that column, energy costs, so of course in States it's much lower. So they're telling me, look, if we look around Europe, we cannot say that we have carbon leakage, that we had like scores of companies which just close their production and move it out of Europe. We didn't have that. But what we have, and we have to recognize it, we had something like investment leakage. That the companies which are producing here, they don't want to go. They want to stay. They like it on the European market. We are the biggest market in the world. But the fact is, when the shareholders have to look where we would like to invest to enlarge the production, so the energy costs play a very important role. So here, I think what happened, thanks to these high energy prices, and it has one positive effect. And positive effect was that our companies in Europe, also because of this price pressure, became twice as energy efficient as American companies over the last few years. And I think that's our European response to the challenges of today. But at the same time, I think we all recognize the fact that simply we need to be much more competitive with our energy prices, not only for the sake of competitiveness of our industry, but also for the costs of energy, which are so important for the quality of life of our citizens. So therefore, I'm absolutely clear on the fact that the energy union will be till great extent judged upon how much we manage to attain these competitive prices, if we really manage to open and complete the internal energy market, if we really will be able to remove all the technical barriers, improve the interconnections, to remove these different languages, methodologies, and barriers created by national regulators, and create that big market for the energy companies, which would force them to be much more competitive and to force them to offer better prices. And the last factor I would mention, because it's actually very important now and in the coming months, and this is the result of the Paris Conference of on the climate change. Because I think that we have to make clear to our global partners, and we do so, that Europe cannot do it alone. We are now emitting 10% of greenhouse gases globally. So even if we would emit nothing, it's still be very devastating for the future of our planet, because 90% of the greenhouse gas emission would stay, would be emitted simply by other continents and by other countries. So therefore, we need to push our foreign partners to be more ambitious, to have a good agreement in Paris, to show them that they also have to chip in to contribute to this effort, because Europe cannot do it alone. It's important, of course, for our planet, for the next generation, but it's also important for creating more level playing field for our industry. So the environment costs, the cost for being much more environmentally cautious would be more or less the similar for the cost in Europe and elsewhere in the world. And here I think that it will not be only diplomatic pressure which would make the trick in these countries, but it would be also pressure of their own citizens, because they want to live in a cleaner environment, they want to have a clean air, they want to fight air pollution, and you see that even countries like China are realizing that simply they cannot produce the energy in these old conventional ways, because simply it's not acceptable for their population anymore. So that would be, I would say, such a main lines to complete the markets, to make sure that we are removing the barriers which are in there, and if it comes to the our efforts on the global level, that we need to have a much more cohesive approach from other global actors than we have today. Concerning the interconnectors, and I understand that also for other honorable members, this is the key issue. I think that the progress which we achieved since last October is a very important one. Now it's very clear that the potential of Portugal and Spain was definitely not fully used for the sake of Europe, that both countries simply couldn't become the real integral part of the international internal energy market because of lack of interconnections, and this memorandum of understandings which been signed have very important political significance, not only because they've been signed among these three member states, but because the Commission was also always part of this agreement. And that, of course, translates into very concrete steps. In the autumn of this year, we are going to adopt the decision on the so-called second call of proposals for the project of common interest, which is 248 projects, mostly from the energy and transport infrastructure, where the projects which are so key for improving interconnectedness between Portugal and Spain, but also between Spain and France, are on the list. Some of them are already prepared for being adopted, and some of them are in the preparatory phase. So I'm sure that with that high political visibility and with that importance you are putting on these projects, that they will have a very high chance to be adopted, because they are seen not as a project of the regional importance, but the project of European importance from the point of view of completing the internal energy market. Concerning the TTIP, now we go through very important phase. I think what there are several important things happened over the last couple of weeks. At first, that after this very difficult debate in a US Congress, so-called fast-track facility was approved, meaning that now the White House has a real chance and mandate to complete the negotiations for free trade area, but also with the Pacific area. What is also very important to say is that the energy chapter to be included in the TTIP was since already some time so-called European offensive demand. So that was us who wanted to put it there. We want to have energy chapter under TTIP because it opens many doors. If you have energy covered by the free trade area, several restrictions, especially for export of crude, for crude oil and LNG, are not applicable to these countries. And I can tell you that we presented our demands. The American side was politely listening to us, but I don't think that we have a clear answer to our demand. But what has happened, and that's very positive, was when I had the last meeting with the Secretary of Energy, Mr. Moniz. He told me that, look, we listened to you, We know it's important for you, so if it comes to the LNG exports, I signed all demands for export licenses which arrived to my table. So all the companies which want to export LNG to the third markets being allowed to do so. So now the United States can export up to 95 billion of cubic meters of LNG per year, which is quite significant sum if we compare it to our overall consumption in Europe, which is, I think the last year it was around 405 BCM, and we project that until 2030 it would oscillate between 380 to 450 BCM. So one quarter of this could be if, of course, we would offer the proper conditions and would be ready to pay the price by the LNG export from the States. But that's not only one source, because you ask about other possibilities. The progress of so-called Southern Gas Corridor, which is the new pipeline being built from Azerbaijan through Georgia, Turkey, Greece, Albania, to Italy, is progressing very well. That's a huge investment which was made of $45 billion. The project is being built on time, and it should bring the Caspian gas to Europe before 2020. Now, of course, it's the question how we will link the rest of Europe to this new pipeline to make sure that we can really use this new gas from the new destination through the new route to the benefit of the European energy security. At the same time, we see how the LNG market itself has changed because of the volatility on the oil prices and Japan becoming nuclear country again. For the first time, we have seen that the spot prices for LNG in Asia been lower than the prices what we pay for pipeline gas in Europe. Of course, it's difficult to forecast for how long this would be, but it's very clear that gas is slowly but surely becoming global commodity. So it would not be only long-term contracts which would decide the price of gas, but it would be world exchanges, so-called regional gas hubs, or I would say international brokers who would decide the price of gas, something similar to what we see with the price of oil. And therefore we pay so much attention to the LNG strategy for Europe to make sure that we have terminals strategically located, that they are much better interconnected than before, so we can really look at LNG as one of alternative of supplying energy to Europe. And here Portugal and Spain can play a crucial role, because if I remember correctly, your capacity for LNG more or less corresponds to the volumes of the gas we are importing from Russia. So that's, I think, very important asset which we have to develop, and therefore we need all these interconnectors between you and Spain, between Spain and France, the so-called MidCat, because that would definitely help to use your potential to the benefit of the whole Europe. Mr. Matthias was asking about Juncker investment plan and about the mechanics of how it would work, and also about this leveraging effect, which of course was discussed at several occasions, because it's a very novel way how to support investment. The Juncker investment plan should cover the gap on the market caused by market failure. What I mean by that? Because of the crisis, we have still in Europe huge underinvestment. I mean, in the crisis year, the investments in Europe been lower by more than 15%, which of course, depending on the GDP of the current year, is some between 200 to 300 billion euros. So it's a lot of money which we not invested, and we feel it on our infrastructure, in energy, in transport, in information networks, and simply we miss that investment in Europe. But at the same time, now we see the paradox that despite the fact that the economy is growing again, investment are still below the level of 2007. I think we're still 12% below that mark. And we have lots of money in the banks, lots of money in the financial markets, but we cannot somehow channel them to the project we think they are very important, because investors are still very cautious. And what would happen if the crisis would come back? Will I get the return on my investment? So they need kind of additional reassurance. And therefore, we want to use the Juncker Investment Fund as a kind of insurance fund, as a first losses insurance instrument. That, look, the project looks fine. You would invest in it if you would get more reassurance, more faith in economic development of Europe. If you hesitate, here is the Juncker Fund, which should help you to make the decision. We'll go together in that project with you, EIB, the European Commission, Juncker Investment Fund, and we invest together. If there will be eventual loss later on, we take it on ourselves. We will cover your first losses, and this is how we want to, you know, overcome that hesitation, that worry which is still on the market, to make sure that this huge private investment funds, which have lots of cash but do not know, are not sure to invest them, that they would overcome that feeling of uneasiness and will start to invest in a normal way, to which we really want to help them and offer the Juncker Investment Fund. Where the money will go, of course, it would very much depend on the quality of the project, because they have to be bankable with the aid of the Juncker Investment Fund. So I can tell you that what we have got as an indication, what the member states feel they need to get the investment for, been 29% of the projects been for energy infrastructure, 29% for transport infrastructure, and I think from Portugal's, more or less, this was going into the direction. Infrastructure, but also smart meters and some energy efficiency, especially in the building. So that been the projects which been proposed, and we see already the first selection of the EIB before all this fund is making fully operational, which is happening right now. It will be done before September. So they've been mostly the project related to the energy efficiency, and I think that they will have a big chance to succeed. Concerning the connection with Northern Africa, I know that there are promising plans between Portugal and Morocco. I think there is a huge potential, because Portugal has a potential to export energy not only to Europe but also to Northern Africa. We are very much supporting the creation of so-called Mediterranean Energy Platform, to make sure that we are working together with Mediterranean partners on gas interconnection, on electricity interconnection, and also that we are introducing to the North African partners the potential of renewables also they have in their countries, because they have definitely lots of sun, and they can really change the economy significantly if we help them to use these new technologies. So this is something which I'm sure it's within the concept of this Mediterranean strategy, and I'm sure it could be beneficial for both Portugal, Europe, and the North African partners. Mr. Barreto was asking about more concrete terms concerning this infrastructure build-up and concerning the implementations of the MOU. As I said, the first decision on some of these projects from the financing point of view should be adopted already in the autumn of this year, when we would be assessing the second call for proposals for the PCI. And then, to be quite honest, a lot depends on the project promoters, on the permit process, and on the execution of the projects. Because one question which is very important to answer is why we introduce the system of PCIs, Project of Common Interest. Because our experience was that big infrastructural projects in Europe usually taken, you wouldn't believe, but it's true, around 11 years to execute. 11 years at average we need in Europe, so it's not super efficient or less efficient country. At every 11 years we need for implementation of such a project, because very often two countries had a problem to find the common ground for financing, for common regulatory framework, for routing of these projects, and many related questions. And therefore, we introduced the system of this project of the common interest to have a concrete list and also to have much clearer obligations, making sure that these projects are decided and started to be implemented between 3 to 4 years. Speeding up the procedure, speeding up the execution of these projects, because everybody would clearly benefit from such an accelerated procedure. And if it comes to the other legislative proposals I was referring to, we are very much aware that our time is very limited in the European Commission, and therefore we would like to put all these key legislative proposals which should build this fundament, this basis for the energy union within 3 years. So we are starting this summer. We'll be very active in the autumn, next spring, next summer, next autumn, and then the last pieces of the legislation should be put on the table in 2017. So we still have a solid chance to complete the legislative process with European Parliament and Member States within the mandate of this Commission, and in that way to make sure that once we will be leaving, after the completion of the term, that there is solid basis of the energy union, and our successors will have a very solid chance to develop it further and to really see the real benefits of the work which was done in this commission. Mr. Cardozo was asking about asking. About energy mix between France and Germany, and I think I can link my answer also to the question of Mr. Bravo Nico on the nuclear energy, because that's very much interrelated. That's one of the, to be quite honest, most polarizing question you might have when you discuss energy in Europe, because clearly we have countries in Europe very much divided on this issue. We have now 16 member states which is producing energy in nuclear power plants. We have 14 member states which want to continue with the production of the nuclear energy. We have, I think, 138 reactors. In Europe, there are some reactors which are being built in Finland, in UK, in Slovakia, in Czech Republic, there are plants in Hungary, and of course this discussion is always very very sensitive. And for us, the clear framework are the treaties on this issue. So from one side, we have to respect so-called sovereignty of the energy mix, meaning that every member state has a right to decide how they want to produce the energy, and nobody wants to touch that sovereign right of each member state. At the same time, we are making very clear that if we want to build energy union, we have to respect also common frames. So we have a common frames for 2030. We are creating more and more common frameworks through these legislative proposals we have put on the table, and we have to make sure that even if we have different energy mix in each member state, we have a common goals, common European ambition, which we are going to achieve together. And to be quite honest, if you look at it from this point of view, it's not that much different from other areas of European cooperation, where, for example, when I still remember the heated debate we had on European arrest warrants, where again we started from 28 different legal cultures and legal environments, but we ended up with one common approach how to handle this issue. And this is a little bit what we are also trying to do here in the field of energy. Concerning the nuclear security and safety, this is one competence which we take extremely seriously, because it's very important for the health and safety of our citizens and for the protection of environment in Europe. And we have a competence to inspect nuclear power plants. We have nuclear inspectors working for the European Commission, which are doing this regular verification, regular controls, and they've been very instrumental where this nuclear power station stress test has been executed over the last years. And then, of course, these inspections are very tough, very detailed, and I'm sure that if there were any shortcomings, any problems, they've been dealt with, and that we would not allow the nuclear power plant operating in Europe, which is not up to the highest safety and security standards. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I hope that I answered all, or if not all, so most of the questions which are proposed by the honourable members of your
Thank you very much, Thank Mr. Sefcovic. Muito obrigado. É certamente a última vez nesta legislatura que temos ocasião de. It's certainly, we don't have to, I will say it in English. It's certainly the last time in this legislature that we will have occasion to meet here, as we have elections in September, October. So I'd like to thank you and to associate myself with the words that have been said. It is a very fruitful cooperation. I want to thank you for your availability and for your presence here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for all the questions. Thank you.